NFL playoffs, divisional round in the AFC, you have all division winners left. In the NFC, we've got three teams from the same division. Going to start the show with my observations about the playoffs, then later former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell will join me with his take. Upton was the Colts director of player personnel when they were in Super Bowl III and Super Bowl V. Before the season, I mentioned that in the NFC, you have the top three quarterbacks in that conference, meaning guys who have won the Super Bowl, and they're all nearing the end of their careers. That was Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Stafford. So we're at an end of an era. This season started to provide opportunity for the next generation. And who is that going to be? Especially now that Tom Brady is knocked out of the playoffs. The Cowboys did a great job on Monday night, not giving Tampa Bay any chance to win that game. Brady didn't have a chance to win that game late. So now we're truly entering a new era in the NFC. And that's one very compelling aspect of these NFC playoffs. Because whoever gets into the Super Bowl, history suggests that there's a very strong chance that they'll return. I'll get to more on that in a minute. Let's look at the Giants-Eagles matchup. Jalen Hurts is scheduled to start at quarterback for the Eagles. Daniel Jones had an amazing game for the Giants last week. I mentioned the playoff games between divisional rivals are really difficult to predict, and they can be very close games. And last week, we saw that. The Dolphins and Bills, the Ravens, Bengals, and the Seahawks 49ers. Two of those games went down to the wire, and the third, the Seahawks, had a lead on the 49ers. In this Eagles-Giants matchup, the Eagles won both regular season games against the Giants. It's really hard to win three times in the same season against a really good team. So that's in the Giants' favor. But here's the main thing I'm looking for in this game. The Eagles won their first eight games, and part of the key was that they didn't lose a fumble in their first seven games. Not one fumble lost in their first seven games. In the two of the three games that the Eagles lost this year, they turned the ball over four times in each of those games. In the 14 games that they won, they turned the ball over a total of 10 times. If you look at the Eagles' stats, in 12 of their wins, they've had either one or zero turnovers. And in seven wins, they didn't turn the ball over at all. So if the Giants get multiple turnovers, that's going to escalate their chance of winning. That's true in any game, of course, but against Philadelphia this year, it's virtually essential to get multiple turnovers. Daniel Jones, Giants quarterback, had an incredible game against the Vikings last week, but that was in a dome under perfect conditions. It would be very impressive for him to duplicate that in the Philadelphia weather. We don't know how Jalen Hurts will be coming off his injury. I think the Giants really need Philly to turn the ball over quite a bit to have their best chance to win. But it is so difficult to beat a good NFL team three times in a single season. My hunch is this will be a close and low-scoring game. Dallas at San Francisco. These two teams have a great playoff history, and I will get to that in the final segment of this show. Dallas played awesome on Monday night. Former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell is going to add his perspective to that in the next couple of segments. The real question here to me is how consistent is Dallas going to be throughout the playoffs? They have had some great streaks this season and an occasional bad game. They can't afford to have a bad game. To me, the 49ers still look like the team to beat in the NFC. They had a rough first half against Seattle in a tough divisional matchup. This is a tough matchup because both teams met in the playoffs last year. But San Francisco, to me, is still the team to beat in the NFC. Now, Dallas overcame Tampa Bay last week. Can they overcome San Francisco this week? The Cowboys' secondary doesn't really match up well against San Francisco's receivers, but the Cowboys did overcome that last week, facing Godwin and Evans. In this game, I'm looking for which Cowboys team shows up. Now, the two big factors I'm watching for in this game is how well the Cowboys defense plays and how good of a game Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore has calling plays. He had a great game last week, but I do think he helped lose the Jacksonville game. Not to be overly critical of anybody, but the 49ers play calling, in my opinion, has consistently been better than the Cowboys this season. And I think that could be a real factor in this game. Okay, let's move on to the AFC. And I talked about quarterbacks and playoff history. You would have to go all the way back to 1998 to find an AFC championship game that didn't include at least one of these six quarterbacks: Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Rich Gannon, and or Steve McNair. That's what I call QB reality. I've written a couple of blog posts about that on thegamebeforethemoney.com. So in this case, history strongly favors a Kansas City against Cincinnati rematch in the AFC championship game. Let's chat Bengals and Bills. The Bengals are listed as the underdogs. They are defending AFC champions. A lot of times you give a team with championship experience a reason to feel slighted, give them something to prove, they are going to play exceptionally well in that game. A good example in college football this year was Georgia against Tennessee. I expect the Bengals to come out and have a great game. I also expect the Bills to play very well. But last week, I mentioned the Bills' questionable ability to run the ball late to close out games. And I mentioned that clock management was also something that I thought could end Buffalo's season. And look at the end of last week's game. They gave Miami a chance to win that game late. And then they barely made the first down to close out the game. It was literally inches. There is a bigger margin for error against the Dolphins than there is against Cincinnati. If it comes down to something like that again, that situation favors the Bengals. This game will have an emotional context. I think unless Buffalo finds a way to really control this game throughout, the Bengals have an advantage to win late if it's close. And I think the Bengals are going to win this game. Jacksonville at Kansas City. Last week, I mentioned that the Jaguars can look absolutely awful at times and yet still win. And they were down 27-0 last week and still won. You know the hare and the tortoise story? They are like the tortoise. They stay steady even down 27 points. I also said that Jaguars coach Doug Peterson gave them an advantage in the playoffs. He's won a Super Bowl. I honestly can't tell you how this game turns out. The two head coaches know each other very well. Doug Peterson worked for Andy Reid on both the Eagles and Chiefs. He even played under Andy Reid. He also played under Don Shula and Mike Holmgren. Jacksonville is not the most talented team in the playoffs, but they are, however, one of the most resilient, and that makes them unpredictable. We just don't know how Jacksonville is really going to do in this situation. Think about the Bengals last year. Barely made the playoffs. They beat the Raiders. Everybody figured, well, they'll lose to the Titans. They beat the Titans, and everybody figured, well, they'll certainly lose to the Chiefs. And they end up going to the Super Bowl. Now, I'm a huge believer in Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs in general. Looking at the AFC West at the beginning of the year, Denver and the Raiders were improved with big stars like Russell Wilson and Devontae Adams, and Kansas City traded Tyreek Hill, so the Chiefs downgraded. The AFC West looked like the most exciting division in football before the season started. And yet, Kansas City ran away from the field like Carl Lewis. It wasn't even close. The way Jacksonville has played lately, they've now won six straight. I look for the Jaguars to really be competitive next year, building on the confidence and success of this year. And it's not out of the realm of possibility for Jacksonville to win this game against Kansas City, much like the Bengals won last year. But I really favor Kansas City in this game. Quick things to remember about the playoffs in general. There always seems to be at least one team each year that has a bye week into the playoffs and comes off a bit slow. So don't press the panic button if either the Eagles and or the Chiefs look a little bit unlike themselves in the first half. Also remember, the teams that block and tackle the best during a particular game are most likely to win, and a fourth quarter pass rush can make all the difference. I'm Jackson Michael. This is the Game Before the Money. Coming up, former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com. Upton Bell has been around the NFL his entire life, including while his father, Burt Bell, was NFL commissioner back in the 1940s and 1950s. Upton himself worked for the Baltimore Colts and was general manager of the New England Patriots. He's on the line with us now to talk playoffs.
So Upton, what are you seeing in the playoffs now going into the divisional round?
Even though I was suspect on wild card super, as the NFL calls it, super wild card weekend, every game except one turned out to be really exciting. And all of the different skilled players there and the different teams, even the ones that got eliminated, they were all good games except the second half of the 49ers-Seattle game. But this coming weekend, and it shows you how the NFL has changed in that we don't talk about defense a lot, except maybe if you're talking about the 49ers. What we're talking about is great quarterbacks, great receivers, and teams that throw the ball. Well, no matter what the score is, let's start with the first game, which is Kansas City and Jacksonville. You've got two great quarterbacks, one coming up in Trevor Lawrence, and of course the other one who's on his way to the Hall of Fame. Jacksonville, I don't think, is capable of being Kansas City. But back to Burt Bell's whole thing on any given Sunday, in this case, on any given Saturday. But when you look at all the tools that Kansas City has, and you look at Lawrence, and he has some of the tools, you think it's going to be all Kansas City. I think in that game, I don't know what the point spread is now, but I would favor Kansas City by at least 6 points. But I think you're going to see an aerial show, which is what the public wants. So in that game, you will see decent defense by Jacksonville. But I think Kansas City's offense is just too much for them at this time. And, of course, the one particular defensive player that the Chiefs have is Chris Jones, who can really overwhelm an offense. So in that case, I do like Kansas City. But there's, again, so many stars in that game. And you're seeing two quarterbacks in there. That's what you're going to see this weekend. The second game is a little bit different in that you've got Philadelphia and the Giants. Now, Daniel Jones has been abused, amused, and everything else like that, but they pulled a big upset over the Vikings. And now they come in against Philadelphia, who should be playing, if they win this game, they will be playing, I assume, against San Francisco. But you don't know in this game because Jalen Hurts has been hurt, and nobody really knows how good he really is or how he could be in this game. And that's the big if factor. The best coaching job in the NFL this year has been by Brian Daboll. He's taken a team that very few people would pick any of their players, maybe a couple, to be any good at anything. But yet Daniel Jones has shown himself to be a lot better quarterback than we thought, including myself.
And Barkley has certainly resurface. You know, he missed a couple of years because of injury, and I think it was easy to kind of write him off, but all of a sudden he's putting together some really good games.
Well, he was big in the game against the Vikings, and both he and Jones, but you're right, the question has always been about him, was the injury factor. But if he can remain healthy, even into next year, they're going to be pretty good. And they do have, I mean, the coaching job that Daboll has done with that team is as good as anything I've ever seen in one season. Because believe me, they truly have a talent deficit. But I think that they will be in the game. And this is the other thing, Michael, more so than any other sport, coaching in football is an absolute must. And you saw what happened with the coaching situation last Saturday night when it was 27-0 San Diego. I still call them San Diego. I insist on that.
The Chargers.
The Chargers. And they blow that. I mean, I don't care how good Trevor Lawrence is, but coaching was a factor there. And coaching in college and particularly pro football does make a difference, particularly if you don't have a really good football team, and that's the case of the Giants. So I like the Eagles, but not by much if Hurts isn't right. So that's the second game. Now, the game of the weekend, and it's too bad it's the first game, instead of putting America's team and the 49ers, who I think the 49ers, by the way, have more talent than any of the teams in the playoffs. Total talent.
Well, especially at the skill positions. I mean, they have really...
But that's all that counts, Michael, anymore. If you have a quarterback and you have great receivers and you have a decent offensive line, you can do it. Because today's NFL is all played outside, not played inside. You got the people outside and you got a guy that can throw it, you're going to be. And that's why you see, except for the Giants, every quarterback in there is as good as you're going to get. But the first game, to me, is the game of the weekend with more at stake than anything. And that is Buffalo and the Bengals. Buffalo with a guy that I think is the closest thing to Superman I've ever seen. He makes a lot of mistakes. Could have blown that game last weekend against Miami. But Allen is just on another planet. He can flick a ball 60 yards. Just flick it. And it's just amazing. Burrow is right there with him. Not the runner that he is. But here's the question I have. I'm going to favor Buffalo, but only slightly. And I wouldn't even be surprised if they lose. But the biggest problem for Burrow is... And he's got Chase, he's got all of these great players. He's got the players on the outside. Is three of his offensive linemen might not be there. I mean, I think they only have two offensive linemen left. And let's face it, even though the game's played outside, if you can't protect the quarterback, you're dead. If the Bengals' offensive line was intact, and there's still a question about the left tackle, I would pick them to beat Buffalo. But because they're not intact, and you saw what happened last year, even though Cincinnati made it to the Super Bowl, that basically he's lucky that he's walking after the Super Bowl loss to the Rams, the beating he took, and some of the beatings he took early on against Tennessee. So again, that game is going to hang on. Is there enough production out of that offensive line to protect Burrow? Then I'm going to pick Cincinnati in an upset. But I don't think that'll happen. I think Buffalo will prevail.
You know, one of my question marks with the Bills, and you saw this at the end of the Dolphins game, I thought, is their lack of a running game when they need it? And their clock management. Now, you are very familiar, having seen Johnny Unitas for so long. And he was one of the best clock managers at the end of games of anybody. Do you see that as a potential fault with Buffalo?
I do. But by the way, a trend that I'm seeing throughout the league, and we saw in the playoffs that I don't like at all, is all of the clock management. Miami could have won that game, and you know, the excuses were made. We weren't more aware of the situation. I mean, they literally wasted their chance to win that game, or at least tie it at the end, because the coach was confused. He's the play caller, and they don't get the play on time. How many times have you seen in the playoffs, and this has been a big problem with the Patriots too, where they don't get the play in time, they have to call a timeout, they're all out of their timeouts because they wasted them, they don't get the play in, the guy is confused. I was screaming at the set, Miami, you can win this game. Just get somebody on the field. Call the play.
Yeah, exactly. And it blows my mind. I can't remember so many timeouts wasted. And I'm starting to wonder, like, is it worth the 5 yards, you know, early in the second half? Is calling timeout worth that 5 yards when you're going to be in a situation like that?
I have said this since Garfield was shot. It is the most ridiculous thing, particularly early on, to take the timeout for the 5 yards. You're going to need it.
Coming up, more analysis with former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell on The Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com and check out the Game Before the Money podcast. Back with Upton Bell discussing the NFL playoffs and the sharp increase of timeouts used to avoid delay of game penalties in the past few years. A lot of teams not getting the play called in time, not getting set up in time. So here's former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell speaking more about that.
They don't get the play in on time, or the quarterback doesn't get it off in time. And I'm saying, this is a virus that's just come in the last couple of years. This never happened. Now, the other thing is this. The immortal offensive coordinator, who everybody is looking for. When you didn't have an offensive coordinator, and I know times have changed, so I'm with the change. But when you didn't have an offensive coordinator, was it Unitas or any of them? Nobody was calling their plays because they were so well prepared by their coaches that they called the game. Now, if a play needed to be sent in, that's fine. I mean, even Paul Brown, he sent the plays in, and I know Otto Graham didn't like it, but you never saw that happen. Eubank and Unitas planned the game plan. I never saw Unitas call a timeout. Never. At the end of the game, at any time in the game, because he didn't know the play. Or he didn't know what he was going to call next. What are you paying a quarterback $200 or $300 million for some schmo to send in a play? That's what they're getting paid for. So now you pay the guy, and he becomes a robot. You don't think a Tom Brady can't call his own plays?
It's ludicrous to think about sometimes that people are calling plays for Brady, Aaron Rodgers, some of these guys who have been around the league sometimes longer than their head coaches or their offensive coordinators, you know, with this influx of young coaches.
You lose the feel of the game, too. You know, you're just taking on now. You have to execute the pass. You have to make the call at the line. You have to recognize the defense. There's a lot of complexity to it. I understand all of that. But on the other hand, if you've grown into it, you can do it. Now, if your offensive coordinator wants to send a play in from time to time, that's fine. But you're on the field. You have the feel of the game. But they've created these alleged geniuses, these play callers, and I am all for today's game. I like the open offenses. I like all of that. And I like the creativity. But again, there's something unreal to me that somebody has a microphone in their ear, offensively and defensively, where they're just Ronnie Robot. Back to that game is that Joe Burrow, unlike Allen, I think Allen still needs people calling things in because he's got this incredible otherworldly talent and he can concentrate on that. Joe Burrow to me is a guy that was born like a Unitas or any of the really gifted people that if he had to, he could call his own plays, and he has all of the weapons. So again, in that game, that's the one I would tell your audience, Michael, to watch. If they watch nothing else this weekend, two great quarterbacks, great line of receivers on both sides, wide open game. And in the case of Allen, to me, barring injury, if he wanted to, they talk about Lamar Jackson. Allen could average near 100 yards a game just running the football. Imagine you're a defensive back and you're trying to essentially bring down at full speed a 250-pound man at 6'6". And by the way, the only defensive coach in all of the playoffs, and it shows you how things have changed, is Sean McDermott of Buffalo. All the other ones are offensive minds.
That's a great point. Now, Upton, you mentioned earlier, you said that you assume that the Eagles-Giants winner is going to be playing the 49ers. So are you more sold then on Kyle Shanahan as a coach? Are you not sold on the Cowboys after their victory against Tampa Bay? What's your thoughts there?
The Cowboys are everybody's bad dream. They are America's team, and I always wondered why. San Francisco has the most talent of all the teams in the playoffs, AFC and NFC. Shanahan, who I do not like, has installed an offense that is perfect for them and has almost at every position somebody who is really good. I mean, they've drafted well. Their trade for the running back, their whole situation, wide receivers, they've got that. They've got, a wide receiver that can also be a running back. I mean, they have everything that you want. And Kittle is going to go to the Hall of Fame. Samuels, if he can remain healthy, is already one of the best. They are the most complete team. And he's installed an offense that the Patriots tried with Mac Jones, and it showed how disastrous it could be if you don't really install it years before. So they've all played in his offense, complex as it might be or seem to be, and it enables a quarterback that nobody ever heard of because he was taken in the last pick in the draft, Purdy. If it was any other offense, then Purdy, without the talent, Purdy wouldn't exist. I think he's okay. I think in that offense, he'd be fine. If he was playing for another team, he'd still be on the bench. That's how good they are.
Yeah, they've been great this year, and it's pretty incredible because they are on their third quarterback.
Yeah, they are. And in the case of Dallas, I like Dak Prescott, but I'm not in love with him. Now, Dallas does have a really good defense, but I have questions about their offense, and they have questions about, they beat a defenseless Tampa Bay team, and they made it look fairly easy. But I think it's a lot different against the 49ers. Unfortunately, they have to play them next. But I don't think Dallas is a complete team. Listen, I'd love to see Prescott finally get over the hump. I mean, they think they got over the hump playing Tampa, but Tampa you know, again, was a toothless team. And here's the other reason why I would favor the 49ers anyway. San Francisco has been resting since Saturday. Dallas played Monday, and for the biggest game they're going to play all year, maybe in years, they have 5 days rest. That is not enough. I'm sorry, I don't care what anybody says. As a Colt player told me years ago, when I asked him, how long does it take to recover from a Sunday game? He said, usually by Saturday. The body, especially the tension of it, the, you know, fighting for the playoff, body can't take it. So we'll see what effect that has, but it will have some effect. And the other thing is preparation. You've got to prepare for the most complex offense you'll face, even though to San Francisco, it's not complex. But you've got to face an offense that has all the tools where the quarterback, he'll can just turn it on, turn on the machine and it runs by itself. That's a tall order. So I like the 49ers in this, and I like them by at least a touchdown.
All right. Thanks to Upton Bell there for that great insight. And, you know, the 49ers have had a couple extra days of rest, more than the Dallas Cowboys. And this is after a 17-game season. Everybody is beat up right now. But the 49ers have had a couple more days to recover, plus a couple of more days to prepare. So that's a difference. We'll see how much of a difference it makes in that game. Now, the Cowboys and 49ers have had a great playoff history against each other. A lot of very memorable games. I've covered that in blog posts on the GameBeforeTheMoney.com and on the Game Before the Money podcast. There have been some great stories shared about those games. You'll want to check out the website and the podcast. There are a lot of interviews with great NFL legends, just posting one about Chuck Foreman. You may have heard part of that interview a couple weeks ago on the show, and the full interview is about to be posted on the podcast. Interviews with Dan Fouts, Tom Flores, Dick Vermeil, guys in the AFL like Lionel Taylor. I'm Jackson Michael. This is the Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com. Also, check out the Game Before the Money podcast. Coming up, a history of the 49ers and Cowboys in the playoffs. The Cowboys and 49ers have a great playoff history. Going to highlight a few of the outstanding moments in their playoff rivalry. Of course, the most famous is the 1981 NFC Championship game, known as the Catch Game. But San Francisco and Dallas had a real playoff rivalry even before that 1981 NFC Championship game. And the games in the 1990s were outstanding. This playoff rivalry goes all the way back to the very first NFC Championship game, the 1970 NFC Championship game. That game was played at Kezar Stadium in San Francisco. A third quarter play involving two borderline Hall of Famers, 49ers quarterback John Brody and Cowboys linebacker Leroy Jordan, was pivotal. Leroy Jordan intercepted a John Brody pass at San Francisco's 13-yard line. Cowboys running back Dwayne Thomas scored a touchdown on the next play. That put the Cowboys ahead 10-3. The 49ers got into Cowboys territory on the next possession, but this time Hall of Fame cornerback Mel Renfro intercepted a John Brody pass. Dallas running back Walt Garrison scored a touchdown following that interception to make it 17-3 Cowboys. They won 17-10 to earn a trip to Super Bowl V against the Colts. Upton Bell, who you heard earlier on the show, was director of player personnel for the Colts, and Baltimore beat Dallas on a last-second field goal in Super Bowl V. The next year, 1971, also came down to Dallas and San Francisco in the NFC Championship game. The 49ers and Cowboys played each other in the first two NFC Championship games. There's a bit of trivia there for you. The 1971 NFC Championship game was played in Dallas, and the Cowboys defeated the 49ers for the second year in a row, and the Cowboys won Super Bowl VI against the Miami Dolphins. Now, in 1972, the Cowboys and 49ers face each other again in the playoffs for the third year in a row, this time in the divisional round. This game has been forgotten by many because it frankly hasn't been documented well. There isn't as much footage of this game, but really it is an NFL classic. Roger Staubach injured his shoulder in the preseason and missed the vast majority of the 1972 regular season. So Craig Morton started every regular season game that year for the Cowboys. In the divisional playoff game, Morton threw two first half interceptions, and the 49ers built a 21-3 lead in the second quarter. San Francisco led 28-13 in the third quarter, and Cowboys head coach Tom Landry sent Roger Staubach into the game. But Dallas continued to stall until they kicked a field goal with about 6 minutes left, and the 49ers led 28-16 at that point. But San Francisco couldn't run out the clock, and with 2:02 left, the Cowboys started on their own 45, trailing by 12 points. In less than 30 seconds, Staubach drove them to San Francisco's 20, and the Cowboys scored on the next play, and it was 28-23 with 90 seconds remaining in the game. San Francisco's home crowd grew silent, then extremely tense after the Cowboys recovered the onside kick. Roger Staubach scrambled for 21 yards on the next play, and soon afterwards, he hit Ron Sellers for a touchdown to give Dallas a 30-28 lead. Two touchdowns in just over a minute. The 49ers tried to rally. A John Brody completion got them to the Cowboys' 30-yard line, but an offensive holding penalty wiped the play away. And with it went San Francisco's chances. Dallas won 30-28 on the same day as the Immaculate Reception. Imagine watching the playoffs on that day. It was the first big playoff comeback of Roger Staubach's career and the third straight season that the Cowboys knocked the 49ers out of the playoffs. So by the time Dallas and San Francisco met for the 1981 NFC Championship game, that playoff rivalry already had real history. And by 1981, the Cowboys were known as America's team. Dallas went to 5 Super Bowls in the 1970s and won 2 of them. The San Francisco 49ers didn't have the same resume. In fact, the 49ers finished 2-14 in 1979 and also had a losing record in 1980, which were their first two seasons under new head coach Bill Walsh. San Francisco leaped from those losing records to a sparkling 13-3 record in 1981, and that gained them home field advantage throughout the playoffs. A lot of rain fell upon San Francisco in the week leading up to the 1981 NFC Championship game. There were concerns about the playing field at Candlestick Park, and groundskeeper extraordinaire George Toma was brought in. George Toma shared some amazing stories of getting Candlestick Park ready for the playoffs on the Game Before the Money podcast. You can hear that in episode 60 of the Game Before the Money podcast. The 1981 NFC Championship game was a thrilling back and forth game. Dallas had a 17-14 lead at halftime. San Francisco took the lead back in the third quarter. Then the Cowboys took the lead again late in the fourth quarter. And then Joe Montana drove the 49ers inside the Cowboys 20 with less than a minute left. He rolled to his right and threw off balance into the end zone, and Dwight Clark jumped in the air and caught what turned out to be the game-winning score. It almost wasn't the game-winning score, however, as legendary Dallas receiver Drew Pearson caught a long pass from quarterback Danny White on Dallas's ensuing possession. Pearson nearly scored on the play, but was brought down from behind. The big play stunned the crowd, And Dallas was knocking on the door looking for a game-winning field goal, but that 49er pass rush rose to the occasion. That's what I mean by late pass rush. San Francisco forced a fumble, recovered, and preserved the history of the catch. But even that isn't the end of this great playoff rivalry. The Cowboys and 49ers played each other again in the 1990s, this time in three straight NFC Championship games. And as amazing as the catch game was, to me, the 1990s were really the golden era of this playoff rivalry because these really were the two best teams in football at the time. Those three straight NFC Championship games were hard-fought, physical games, a lot of emotion, and a lot of greatness. Pro football at its best. Dallas won the first two and then trounced Buffalo in two straight Super Bowls. There was a lot of buildup to the third straight NFC Championship game between these two teams. Dallas was vying for an unprecedented third straight Super Bowl victory. San Francisco returned an interception for a touchdown early in the game for a quick 7-0 lead. And by the end of the first quarter, the 49ers led 21-0 at home. Champions do not fall easily, however. And the Cowboys soon scored on a long Aikman to Irvin touchdown on a 3rd-and-23. With about 6 minutes left in the game, the 49ers led 38-28. Troy Aikman threw deep to Michael Irvin, and Deion Sanders bumped Irvin. The Cowboys wanted pass interference called and didn't get it. The 49ers won that game and the Super Bowl. So that just heated up this rivalry even a little bit more. If you get a chance to watch that game or the highlights of that game, the 1994 NFC Championship game, do yourself a favor and watch it. It's tremendous football. Any of those three NFC Championship games make for superb viewing, even though the scores weren't necessarily that close. Last year, the Cowboys and 49ers renewed that playoff rivalry 40 years after the catch game. Dallas trailed 23-7 going into the fourth quarter, but scored 10 fourth quarter points for a chance to put together a game-winning drive. With 14 seconds left, Dak Prescott ran up the middle for 17 yards. He rushed to spike the ball to stop the clock, but couldn't get the snap off in time. And the 49ers won 23-17, yet another exciting finish in what has turned out to be one of the great NFL rivalries in the playoffs. I'm Jackson Michael. Thank you for listening to The Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com. Tune in next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central. Also check out the Game Before the Money podcast, available on all major podcast apps.